experience of learning new things together has rekindled a spark that had faded in your marriage. You're having tons of fun, and it shows in your videos. You don't know who all of the subscribers are now, but while talking to those who comment, you figured out that at least a handful are older relatives of students sharing your kids' dorms. You eventually find the courage to sign up at the newcomer level in a local dance competition. And while you don't place in the top, you don't feel that you've embarrassed yourself either. Episode 489 shows you driving 6 hours to attend a statewide competition where you take home the beginner bronze. Ensuing videos document your journey to the championship competitions, as well as the transformation of your marriage from ho-hum to hot stuff. Things continue to get better. Over the course of 2 years of training and vlogging, you pick up the attention of thousands of people who are inspired by your commitment to later-in-life fitness and a beautiful art form normally associated with the young and svelte. You and your spouse are anything but. But people love watching you anyway. Your fans help you pick out costumes, make workout suggestions, and trade dance stories. But you find they're just as eager to talk about strategies they've used to reinvigorate their personal relationships as they are about your hobby. As your audience has grown, you've gotten to meet some of your fans, and you're stunned at how pleased they are to meet you in person, how they want to pose for pictures with you, as if you're some kind of television star. Your following gets big enough that you think it's worth reaching out to other YouTube dance channels and asking if they'd be interested in submitting some content to your page or doing an interview. Dance schools, dance teachers, fan pages of So You Think You Can Dance and Dancing with the Stars, and dance gear brands, dance conferences, and competitions start reaching out to you to ask if you can post their brands or make appearances on their show or yours. You start getting sponsorship offers from workout gear companies, theaters, and sports drinks. By day, you sell insurance. In the pre-dawn hours and late at night, you engage and business develop while your partner edits videos. On the weekends, you dance. Together, you're having the time of your lives. It's been 6 years since you started this project, Sam. You're now 58 years old, and your income has nearly doubled now since it's subsidized by brands associated with dance, health, healthy lifestyles, and personal development. You think you'll be able to retire from your insurance job in a year or two, after you've earned enough to pay off the kids' school debt. You have no intention of ever retiring from your vlog, even though it takes a lot of work to keep up with the momentum. Nothing about this transformation has been easy, but it's been incredibly fun. I made this story up, but it's not a fantasy. You can do it, or your parents can. Hell, your grandparents can. It's a scenario that could be replicated in real life. In fact, it's already been done. YouTube best practices. If you want to increase the amount of time people spend watching every video you post on your channel as a whole, make sure you can answer the questions below. Video optimization. Titles. How much thought have you put into your video's title? Does the title accurately reflect the video's content? Is the majority of the title viewable on mobile? Is the title short and concise, emotionally driven, and/or keyword optimized? Descriptions. Are the top two lines of the description keyword optimized? Are there links to other similar videos or playlists in the description? Is there a subscribe link? Are there links to your other social media accounts? Are all of the links clickable and trackable? Tags. Are there at least 10 tags in the description? Are both one word and phrase tags included? Do the tags accurately reflect the video's content? Are the tags valuable? That is, do they have high search volumes but low competition? Can you find that out by using a tool like vidIQ, Google AdWords Keyword Planner, and keywordtool.io. Thumbnails. Does a thumbnail accurately reflect the video's content? If there is text, does it complement the title? YouTube cards. To extend watch time on your channel, are you including YouTube cards within your video to drive traffic to other relevant videos you've posted? Channel optimization. banner. Does the banner accurately reflect the channel's content and genre? Does the graphic transfer well to all devices? About section, channel description. Are the top two lines keyword optimized? Is the first paragraph an overview of the channel? Have you included the upload schedule? Are all of the social media links clickable? They don't have to be trackable. Playlists. Does the channel have custom playlists? Do the playlists have keyword-optimized descriptions? Are the playlists featured on the landing page of the channel? Channel trailer. Is the channel trailer displayed on the landing page? Does the channel trailer accurately reflect the channel's content and genre? Is the channel trailer telling the best story in the shortest amount of time?
How I'm Crushing It, Daniel Markham. What's Inside? Instagram, at What's Inside. It's fitting that a science project was responsible for shifting Daniel Markham's career from pharmaceutical sales rep to half of a world-traveling father-son duo devoted to cutting things in two. Decades of testing, experimentation, and life experience led to his and his son's overnight success. Growing up, Dan had always wanted to be an entrepreneur, but upon graduating from college with a young family, he applied his degree in global business and finance to a position as a pharmaceutical sales rep. The money was good, but for years he put up websites and dabbled in side hustles, or in his words, little random small businesses that totally failed, in the hopes that one would take off and allow him to leave his steady job. When YouTube came along, he put up videos of his kids and wife to share with the rest of his family, who didn't live near him in Utah. He'd always monetized his websites with Google AdSense, throwing up little pop-up ads, and he did the same for the YouTube videos, even though he'd never made any money this way. No one was watching. One day, his son Lincoln came to him for help with his second grade science project. The assignment? To ask and answer a question of his own choosing. The year before, he'd asked, "Why do we have boogers?" and had stuck a giant nose stuffed with green goo on his poster board presentation. This year, he was interested in finding out why humans have earwax, but Dan felt that that was too similar. So, after thinking about it, Lincoln decided that since he loves sports, he'd like to find out what was inside a sports ball. With his father's help, he started cutting balls in half and putting together his project. Dan decided to film the process, posting the results on one of his YouTube channels that he renamed Lincoln Markham to make it easy to identify. The idea was that after making his presentation, Lincoln could share the name of the channel with his teacher and classmates, and they could go watch it on their own time. Dan had already monetized about 80 videos by then, including the previous year's booger video, playing around with the titles and tag words to make them more appealing. He added this one to the lot. It was January 2014. Almost a year later, on a winter day in December 2014, Dan got an AdSense notification that he'd earned $4. He checked his analytics. It hadn't come from his websites. He checked YouTube. Someone was watching. Enough someones to generate income. Inexplicably, YouTube had decided it liked his video and had started suggesting it when people were watching videos about baseball. People were clicking on it, and some were commenting, offering suggestions for other types of balls Lincoln could cut open. Maybe this is it, Dan thought. He showed Lincoln what was happening and asked him if he was interested in doing some more videos. Together, they decided to go all in. They hid the other videos on the channel, changed the name to What's Inside, and started cutting. They'd spend 4 or 5 hours together every Saturday using Dan's phone to film videos of themselves cutting open various types of balls, and Dan would throw them up to the platform. As they learned more about how the YouTube algorithm worked, they continued to film on Saturdays even when they were traveling, but they released only one video per week. The videos got better and more polished as Dan taught himself to use Final Cut Pro and enhanced the storytelling elements of the videos. For example, when they cut up a football, they opened with footage of themselves throwing a football around. they learned even more by attending video conferences and networking with other YouTubers. It was at one of these events, the first CVX Live, that Dan heard adventure and extreme sports videographer Devin Graham, a.k.a. Devin Supertramp, announced that the way he made money on YouTube was 10% from AdSense, 20% from licensing content, and 70% from sponsored videos. It just completely blew my mind. I was like, oh my gosh, you can make money from brands that would want to put their stuff on there? That was new to me. It was summer 2015, and Dan scored his first brand deal by making a pitch on a website called FameBit, a marketing site where brands post offers to pay creatives to promote their products. He got paid around $250 to cut open a Rubik's Cube and then $1,000 to cut open a mattress. I thought we had it made. $1,000? And we're just cutting open a mattress. A few months later, he met Sean Shonduras McBride, whom you've heard about earlier, who told him that with their channel's reach, they now had almost 1 million subscribers, they should be pitching the advertising agencies that run big influencer marketing campaigns. Back to the hustle. I had my day job where I was selling drugs and I was traveling to 8 different states, and I would sit there at night in hotels, looking up the people who spoke at VidCon, the biggest video conference in the country. Anybody who looked like they were from an advertising agency, I would Google them and find out what company they worked for and reach out either by email or their Contact Us page. One of those agencies responded. Dan explained that if they were looking for creative ideas for their brands, he and Lincoln would love to work with them. We are family friendly and we cut stuff open. It's like an unboxing channel on steroids. And they said, well, why don't you sign this NDA and we'll talk. It turned out the agency represented Bill and Melinda Gates. What's Inside and a few other YouTube channels were chosen to bring attention to their annual letter outlining their position on current global issues and challenging people to work for positive change in the world. The theme of that year's letter was, Two Superpowers We Wish We Had. Dan, who was born in the Philippines, spoke Tagalog, and had served 2 years there as a missionary for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, LDS, decided that his superpower would be to bring clean, drinkable water to the developing world. His idea was to bring Lincoln to the Philippines to show him why the lack of potable water was such a serious issue. This was their first big brand deal, and it was an important moment. We needed to keep hustling and trying to find brands that we liked and that we wanted to work with that would make sense for our channel. We don't want to align ourselves with a brand that we don't support ourselves. This meant turning down deals, sometimes extremely lucrative ones. Dan is proud of Lincoln for talking sense into him when he had his head turned by an advertising agency that offered them something in the $30,000 to $50,000 range to do a video of them cutting open a toy. There was one problem. It wasn't super interesting. If we cut it open, people would think, why did I watch this? But honestly, I was going to find a way to do it. I told Lincoln about it. I was a little apprehensive, but it was good money. Like, a quarter of my annual salary from my day job. And Lincoln said, no, Dad, absolutely not. We would totally be sellouts if we did that. Our audience would hate it. And as soon as he said it, I was like, you're totally right. At the time, he was 10 years old. They didn't do it. Instead, they posted a different video they were pretty sure would also disappoint their viewers. It was of them cutting open a rattlesnake rattle. They had traveled to the Phoenix Zoo to film the cut as part of the opening about 3 months earlier, but they'd never posted the video because Dan knew from his research that it would be anticlimactic. There's nothing inside a rattlesnake's rattle. But they had no other videos for the week because they'd been on vacation, so they decided to edit the ending for that purpose, even though they were tired from their road trip. It was Saturday night. Dan spent about 7 hours editing and published the video a few minutes before leaving for church the next morning. That post became the third most viral video on all of YouTube in 2016, racking up 42 million views in its first 7 days. An entire new audience arrived, many of whom were significantly older than the demographic Dan and Lincoln had appealed to before. Among them were people who worked at advertising agencies and brands. Now, instead of hustling until 3 a.m. to find and reach out to big marketing players, the big marketing players were coming to Dan. He quit his sales job in July 2016. The generation that's my age, they don't understand social media at all. And then you put in my parents, who are even older. For me to say, I'm leaving a really good job that took me a long time to get to where I am, to step away from that, to make YouTube videos, they were definitely scared, even when I told them the numbers. Those conversations were hard because you don't want to feel that you're letting people down or that people are worried about you. His wife, who had always been supportive but liked her full-time job working for a Fortune 100 company, quit when it became clear that the family balance that was so important to them couldn't be sustained with both parents working such intense hours. And Lincoln? Lincoln still makes videos with his dad, but he also goes to school, plays golf, and hangs with his friends and sisters like any normal boy. Dan is adamant about protecting his son's childhood and his daughter's now that they're running a family channel too. He keeps a healthy perspective about the magical ride his family is enjoying. I want Lincoln to feel like he is still a kid, not like he has a full-time job. I'm looking at a pile of 20 things that would be awesome and timely and good to cut open right now, but I want Lincoln to get home from school and go play with his friends today, so I'm not going to do that. It's a tricky balance. Nike emails and says, "We want Lincoln to be one of the top global influencers for this campaign." Whether or not Lincoln is a top global influencer, and I have a hard time thinking that he is, the fact that Nike thinks he is something Lincoln has on his resume that will never go away. I've done a lot of talking about brand deals and hustling to get those brand deals, but at the end of the day, meeting Bill Gates for that first video, forget about the money. It will forever go down as something that we've done as a family. This is all stuff that if YouTube went away tomorrow, has been amazing life experiences. You never know what is going to take off in life. Definitely nothing is going to take off if you are not consistently working hard and trying different things forever. I never thought that I'd be cutting things open, but if I didn't try and fail at all these other things for all those years, this would have never come about. Dan Markham and his family are practitioners. They did their research. They paid attention to all the little details, and they stayed true to their brand. It's exciting to me to see a family doing so well because they put in the work and executed.
12. Facebook. Facebook remains the juggernaut of the social media game, a platform on par with YouTube for personal brand building and wealth creation. That may come as a surprise for a few listeners. Facebook is often thought of as an old, foggy platform, the place where boomers and Gen Xers share pictures of their families and fill out questionnaires to find out which Game of Thrones character they most resemble, not the place where the young generation is spending its time and money. That's just not the case. Here's the reality. If you're going to build a personal brand and try to monetize it, you have to have a Facebook page. Period. It has almost 2 billion monthly active users, more than half of whom use it daily. There is 1.15 billion daily active users on mobile. If you're crushing it on Snapchat, YouTube, or Instagram, but don't have a full-throttle Facebook strategy, you're severely limiting your potential and growth. Facebook 101. There are a few reasons for this. First, unlike any other platform, Facebook gives you the gift of flexibility. Written content and photographs don't work on YouTube. Instagram allows for a maximum of 1-minute videos on a user's main page at the time of this recording. There's no way long-form written content is getting traction on Snapchat. But on Facebook, a 13-paragraph blog post will work. You can post pictures, and they'll work. You can embed a SoundCloud audio play, and it will work. A 13-second video will work, so will a 31-minute video. Facebook offers complete and utter creative flexibility and has the greatest ad targeting product ever created. No one is too cool for Facebook. If you haven't done so already, go to Facebook right now and register your fan page. because even if it's not the place where you create the pillar content for your personal brand, it is where everything you do on every other platform will come to live for the remainder of your personal brand's existence. Facebook is not only a canvas where you can create original content, but also an imperative distribution channel. The DNA of Facebook is word of mouth. It is the place where sharing culture has thrived beyond measure. On other platforms, you generally either hit a grand slam or you strike out. Not so on Facebook. There, with 61 shares, you're getting at least a single every day. If you're good at creating content, on another day, you could hit a double with 200 shares. You might drop down to 13 shares with the next piece of content, only to follow up with something spectacular that gets you 7,000. With every share, no matter how micro, you're building awareness of your brand in a native way. If anything, it's the best place for people with no followers to begin their personal branding efforts. Because of its incredibly detailed targeting capabilities, you can specify your audience by their interests, of course, but also by their zip code or their employers. Facebook is also an incredible place for someone with a small budget. It's an insanely valuable platform when a nobody launching her fashionista brand has to spend only $13 to boost or target her post of a pretty top and conceivably get as many as 2,600 impressions, depending on her targeting choices. An impression, by the way, is electronically recorded each time an ad is displayed on a user's screen. The cost per 1,000 impressions, the CPM, the M standing for mil, Latin word for 1,000, fluctuates with the market. But right now, it is still one of the cheapest yet most effective ad products in existence, comparable to Google AdWords back in its early days in the early 2000s. That won't always be the case. 18 months after I record this book, Facebook's ad prices would have doubled. Take advantage of the wide open runway while you still can and jumpstart your brand's awareness. Finally, as big as YouTube is, by the time you listen to this book, Facebook will be emerging as a fierce competitor in video. Mark Zuckerberg called video a mega trend, of the same nature as mobile, and has made it clear that video is Facebook's future. In 2016, he told BuzzFeed, "I wouldn't be surprised if you fast forward 5 years and most of the content that people see on Facebook and are sharing on a day-to-day basis is video." When Facebook wants something to work, it puts all of its support behind it. The effect on the social media landscape is generally something like a tectonic plate shift. The platform is in the process of working out deals right now to produce original content and partnerships with millennial-friendly outlets like Group 9, producers of the Dodo, and Vox Media. And, I didn't put this in the book when I wrote it, this is the value of the audiobook, it is making deals right now with the best producers in Hollywood and some of the best shows that will be on quote-unquote television next year that you normally see on HBO or more recently on Netflix are going to show up on Facebook, my friends. It's coming. They're going to be a major video player. Knowing that, wouldn't it be foolish to bypass the opportunity to get in early? You might be thinking, I already make YouTube videos. I'll just put them on Facebook. Two birds, one stone, done. Not so fast. Facebook's algorithm will always give preferential treatment to native Facebook content. You'll get far greater reach by creating an original video for Facebook than by recycling something from another platform. Does the video have great copy alongside of it? Are the first 3 seconds captivating? Does it show understanding of the mindset of the Facebook demographic that would love to share it with a family member or friend? Does it compel an action right there and then? Video is still something of a novelty on Facebook, which means it has the potential to be noticed faster and get greater engagement than whatever you might post on YouTube. That doesn't mean you shouldn't post on YouTube or anywhere else, of course. But do not underestimate the power that doubling down on Facebook could have on your brand. Facebook is the first platform that has combined the ability to do marketing, sales, and branding all in one place. It is still vastly underpriced for the amount of attention you can get from the nearly 2 billion monthly users. Facebook 201. Facebook Live. Facebook has gone all in on Live, trying to give users a place to indulge in the raw, immediate experience of engaging directly with viewers in real time. It's powerful stuff, but be aware that live video is the hardest art form. If you eliminate the news, sports, award shows, and Saturday Night Live, there are very few live TV shows, and for good reason. It takes enormous skill to captivate an audience enough to disrupt their routine at the moment you want their attention. That's a much bigger ask than trying to get people to watch you on their own time. And yet, the spontaneity can really work in your favor. If you can crystallize a special moment and share it with your fans in real time, it can become something truly special to them, too. Just ask Candace Payne of Dallas. Never heard of her? You might know her better as Chewbacca Mom. On May 19th, 2016, Payne opened up Facebook Live to show her Facebook friends a present she bought for herself, a roaring Chewbacca mask. She was so excited, she couldn't even wait to get home. She filmed from inside her car while sitting in the Kohl's parking lot. She titled the post, "It's the Simple Joys in Life." It was a funny look, but what really caught people's attention was her infectious, unstoppable laughter as she delighted in her purchase. Maybe people were feeling jaded. Maybe they were weary of heavy content about the upcoming elections and other serious topics. For whatever reason, the people who saw the post loved it so much, they started sharing it. And so did everyone else who saw it. With 162 million views as of December of 2016, it became the most popular Facebook Live video of that year. As many have pointed out, the vast majority of people who saw the video viewed it long after it was no longer live. But the live format is what made the moment possible. Had Payne known that she was posting for posterity, she might have been more self-conscious. She might have planned in her head what she was going to say. Instead, she just opened up the phone and started filming with her guard down, allowing her personality to shine, as bright as two Tatooine suns. You can't get much more authentic, and the people fell head over heels. For a little while, she was part of the celebrity circuit, appearing on talk shows and being featured in the media. She was rewarded handsomely by Kohl's with thousands of dollars worth of gift cards and merchandise, and she was invited to meet Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook. Hasbro, which made the original Wookiee mask, presented her with a custom-made action figure with her head in a removable mask, attached to a Wookiee body. But what's really cool is how Payne used her 15 minutes of fame to continue building her brand as a positive, deeply religious person dedicated to spreading hope, joy, and optimism. She landed a TLC Me video series, and her website revealed a long list of speaking engagements. She signed a multi-book deal. Her first book, Laugh It Up, published in November 2017, was written, she said, in a video she made while preparing to send her manuscript to her editor. For those of you who think that joy is a frivolous thing that you don't deserve. Candace Payne's story is the stuff of dreams, the kind of moment that can't be planned. That's why I wouldn't recommend Facebook Live for most people unless they perfected their video technique and seen success for a few years and are ready to up their game. It's not generally the place to start from zero, because the experience might be like a first-time rider jumping on a bike without training wheels. For those of you who are ready, though, Live could capture a one-in-a-million moment that you never saw coming and put you on the map. John Lee Dumas, creator of Entrepreneurs on Fire, is a believer too. Without a doubt, Facebook Live is the next thing. I'm having incredible success using platforms like Wirecast and BeLive.tv, which are just tools that allow me to sit at my computer and do a Facebook Live, but they also have text overlay, pull people's comments in, and have full show interaction. And just the engagement that I'm having, the real-timeness, it's just been a different level. Everybody's there. They get the little blip notification. Hey, John's hanging out live right now. I actually call it tea with JLD, just as a cute little rhyme. I pour a cup of tea, I sit on Facebook Live, and I usually go on a rant about some topic for 5 or 10 minutes. And then I start answering questions, just hanging out. Could be 30 minutes, could be an hour, and I'll get hundreds of comments and thousands of views, all just flipping on Facebook Live. So to me, that's where it's at right now. Facebook Live is where the attention is. Collaborate. If you were building a brand based on jokes, cooking, bikes, extreme sports, and bathing suits, anything, go to the top of Facebook and do searches on terms that are relevant to your business. Find the fan pages with the most followers, message them, and make them an incredible offer that makes it worth their while to share your original content on their platform or to work with you in other ways. For example, if you're a biker and you get a viral hit on your post about how a motorcycle helmet saved your life, the best thing you can do would be to spend hours getting in touch with every single popular motorcycle fan page and offering them a brilliantly funny PSA about helmets to share on their page. Collaborating through Facebook is a strategic move that has enormous potential to quickly build up your audience. Imagine this. Let's say you're a newly divorced 42-year-old real estate agent named Sally living in Sacramento, California. There are so many people buying and selling properties out there. How are you going to stand out? You start by creating a pillar piece of content. In this case, your ideal pillar would be a weekly audio podcast that people can listen to as they drive around town scoping out neighborhoods. Bi-weekly would be okay, and monthly would be better than nothing. But you know, the more content you put out, the more opportunities you can create. Stay with me here. You'll see Facebook is the star in this story. Your podcast explores the minutiae of daily living in and around Sacramento and establishes you as a virtual content mayor of the city. Local residents tune in to hear your take on their beloved city. One day you may review a restaurant and local dishes. On another, you'll dig into the history of the city. And on another, you'll interview local influencers. From then on, whenever anyone wants to know more about Sacramento or its future, everyone knows you're the person to contact because you've made it clear that no one knows the city better or loves it more than you. As you're doing your stories about the people, places, or things that make Sacramento a unique, vibrant place to live, you take notes and highlight details from each podcast that can be turned into ancillary pieces of content. For example, if you interview the superintendent of the school district and he mentions that 5 of his teachers recently received prestigious national awards, you found another piece of content. Track down those 5 teachers, take their picture, and create a Facebook post that asks, "Did you know that 5 Sacramento School District teachers have been nationally recognized for excellence in education?" You include a link to your podcast interview with the school superintendent. More and more Sacramentans learn who you are and become regular listeners. When one of them finds out that his friend's family is moving to town because his wife got a job transfer, he forwards the podcast link so that they can learn more about the school district. Suddenly, a family who will need to buy a home has your voice in their ear and your contact information at their fingertips. That cycle repeats over and over until, within 5 years, you're so established as the primo real estate expert of Sacramento that your new business comes in almost exclusively by referral. Then you make more content. You go out and film or photograph the places you talk about in each podcast and post the files to Facebook. You link your podcast to the images so that now people who don't already live in the city can see for themselves what these areas look like without having to go anywhere else on the internet. Now, who the hell is going to see this content when you're brand new to the business and only have 12 followers, most of whom are family? Lots of people. Because Facebook is the one place where you can spend unbelievably smart advertising dollars. Their targeting is unparalleled. You could spend maybe $50 against 25 to 72-year-old Facebook users who live in Sacramento and potentially reach 10,000 people. The details of the platform and its targeting capabilities are changing all the time, so please Google how to run a Facebook ad to get the most current rates and practices. Then, when people start commenting on your page or your content, you answer every single one, every single time. When you get a chance, listen to or read The Thank You Economy. I go into that in depth. When you have no audience, you should be taking every opportunity to engage with people who are taking an interest in you. To do so otherwise is absolutely bonkers. The fact that this needs to be said speaks to many people's audacity and laziness. A podcast would be the best pillar for a real estate agent. But if you just can't get comfortable with that, but you're an excellent writer, your pillar should be a weekly post or your blog. This Week in Sacramento, where you share all the same information I suggested for the podcast in written form, plus local real estate news updates. Now, you're not just the virtual content mayor of the city, but you're its newspaper too. You write a piece about the oldest donut shop in town. The owner mentions that he was nervous about the new Walmart slated for construction down the street. You post that donut article. Then you draw, or you pay somebody $20 to draw a sketch of the corner where the donut shop is located, with a big Walmart logo drawn in. You post the arresting image on your Facebook feed as well. It's striking enough that anyone who cares about the shop or about Sacramento might stop to study it more carefully as it scrolls through their feed. People click the link attached to your blog post, which raises their awareness of who you are and what you do. As a real estate agent, your pillar could also be a reality show like My Daily V. You hire an intern or a professional videographer to follow you around as you show homes, have meetings, negotiate deals, and interact with colleagues, as well as while you attend your son's baseball game or shop at the supermarket. You basically film a daily love letter, an occasional complaint if necessary, to the city where you live and work, and share that love with your viewers. Reality star style. Once you get comfortable with video, Sally, you try your hand at Facebook Live. Every Thursday, from 8 to 9 p.m., Sacramentans and potential Sacramentans can find you in front of the camera, ready to answer any questions that they may have about the real estate market, neighborhoods, schools, doctors, tattoo parlors, all the people and the places that make up the community. People enjoy being part of your show, and you get to spread your knowledge, help people out, and build your brand. Everybody benefits. You post each video to Facebook, then extract pieces to create hundreds of mini videos, like how to negotiate a contract, what to look for when touring a house, and home styling tips for the first-time seller. While you're busy posting original content on Facebook, you're also joining as many Facebook communities as you can. You'll join the national ones for real estate agents, of course, but you also want to join the Sacramento Moms Group, but not to sell, because you know that you should never ask for anything until you've given twice as much or more than you're hoping to get. You join because you're a mom, or because you want to be a mom, or because you have nieces and nephews and want to stay on top of mom talk for them. If you're raising a family, you join other family-oriented groups. If you golf, you join golfing groups. If you like Pokemon Go, you join the Pokemon Go Sacramento group. Get involved in all the lighthearted aspects of the city. If you engage like crazy and build your personal brand properly, people will learn that you're a real estate agent. But they won't shy away from you because they'll know you as a human being first, just as they would had they met you in person. Once you become an influencer within these groups, members will check out your Facebook business page and contact you when they're ready to sell or buy a home. This strategy sounds like a hell of a lot more work than just posing for a picture in front of a cute house while holding an open house sign, doesn't it? It sounds a lot more interesting, too. Which strategy do you think is going to attract the attention and loyalty of more consumers? You know the answer.
How I'm crushing it. Brittany Castro, Financially Wise Women. Instagram @BrittanyCastro. Brittany Castro is creating a personal brand in one of those industries that pretty much discourages it at every turn. Personal finance. She'd originally wanted to be an event planner because she liked socializing and working with people. Math had always come easily to her, but she thought finance would be a dry, boring career. Yet when she was offered a job as a financial advisor, her career counselor suggested that the two fields might have more in common than she realized, because both involved helping people, and said that she'd never know for sure until she tried it. So she went to work at a large corporate firm, where for 5 years she clocked 60 to 70 hours per week. Her counselor was right. She did like the work. What she didn't like was the stress and the corporate environment. A lot of that lifestyle just didn't match up with who I naturally was. I was sick all the time because I was trying to be somebody I'm not. I think it was that internal pressure of following the path that you're told to follow in life and realizing, this is not leading me to a happy life. As the Great Recession hit, she started reading personal development books. If she was going to work for a big chunk of her life, she figured she'd better find something that she enjoyed doing. At the same time, she noticed that women were starting YouTube channels devoted to beauty, makeup, and fashion. And I thought, whoa, that looks so fun. She realized that she did want to stay in finance. I just needed more freedom to do it in a way that felt authentic to me. She set her sights on becoming the next Susie Orman. She's great, but she's for an older demographic. I'm a woman. I'm in finance. There's not too many of us. I'm young, and I'm half Hispanic. I better freaking play this up. It was a process, though, because for so long, especially in finance and law, you're taught, no, you can't, you can't, you can't. It was almost like breaking out of a shell and learning to find my own voice, learning how to be authentic online, but still professional. It's taken me years to find that comfort level. The self-professed business nerd also fed on a steady diet of marketing and branding books. She read Crush It right around the time that she moved to an independent firm where there would be more freedom to leverage an individual brand. In 2011, she launched a blog, a Facebook page, a YouTube channel, and a Twitter account. I had to explain to them, it's the same thing as going to a workshop and teaching about money. The only difference is, it's a video on my YouTube channel. It was just turning what I was doing offline, online. But she still had to get every tweet and script pre-approved. And yet, even though it was a headache, it taught me how to be very thoughtful and intentional, and not just throw up stuff for the sake of it. 2.5 years later, Brittany left the firm to start her own business, Financially Wise Women, catering to women and couples in their 30s and 40s. Not everyone was impressed, but she didn't care. In fact, the more her peers disapproved, the more she knew she was on the right path. For example, in 2015, she launched a finance rap video on YouTube. A lot of financial advisors emailed me or commented to say, this is so unprofessional, and you're using your CFP, your Certified Financial Planner mark, in a way that's not appropriate. I do want to stay respectful, and I do use a compliance person, but when that feedback came, I was like, yes, that's exactly what I want to hear because the video was not made for you. You're an old white guy in Wisconsin. This is for urban teenagers who like to watch BuzzFeed videos. I'm teaching them money principles in a fun and playful way, and they love it. I think there is some validity in listening to what others are saying, but I have to stay true to who I am and ultimately what my vision is for my business and my life. Today, she's on all the expected channels, but surprisingly, Facebook Live is her personal favorite. I love live content. It's easy for me to set up a Facebook Live, connect with people, answer their questions. I think it brings them the most value and makes it the most real for them. She not only conducts Facebook Live sessions within her own Facebook groups and community, but has also done them with her brand partners, like Chase, an entrepreneur. She hopes one day to create an online live stream video show that leverages all the communities she works with. In the meantime, while some in her industry lob criticism at her, she's in demand as a consultant to other firms and advisors interested in learning more about how to market and brand themselves, even if only within a corporate structure. She also accepts a number of paid speaking opportunities each year. Other than that, she's got her head down. I actually don't even care what others are doing in the industry. I never even really look. I just work on my company and my brand. Unless I go speak at a conference, I really don't connect with a lot of financial advisors. And I did that strategically because when I first started the company, there was just so much outside noise. It's draining. It works a lot better because I'm not constantly comparing myself or competing. I need to just do me. Though I don't know Brittany, of all the contributors in this book, she's the one that means the most to me. People working in industries like pharma and law like to point the finger at strict regulations to explain why they're not crushing it on social media. But as you can see, where there's a will, there's a way. Brittany's success proves that when you take the time and effort to learn how to navigate toward your goals while still following the rules, you can go forward without fear.
13. Instagram. Except for YouTube, Instagram has created more famous people than any other platform. It's massive. It's a place where you can be equally successful as a content producer or a content curator, and it's the hottest social network in terms of scale and impact. Some would say it's gotten harder to get noticed there now that it's crowded. It's gotten so popular that college graduates are actually taking a year or two to see if they can get big on Instagram before trying to get a traditional job. It's not as flexible as Facebook, though I predict that very soon it will remove some of the time limits on videos. Although its content is bite-sized like Twitter's, nothing in its structure makes it ideal for having a conversation. Yet, there are many great tactics you can use to garner awareness. Hashtags, collaborations, tagging, ads, that I believe the attention an influencer can enjoy here, especially skilled photographers, chefs, designers, and other artists, runs deeper than on Twitter or Facebook. I know it's true for the 35 and under crowd, and I suspect that the 36 to 50-year-olds are starting to come around, because it's a newer, shinier, and maybe even happier place than the tried-and-true Facebook. Moreover, the importance of the platform has doubled with the launch of Instagram Stories in August 2016. Until then, Instagram was a highly curated place. That's one of the reasons people love it so much. Less polarized and politicized than Facebook. It's a place where you can go to post beautiful highlights of your day. That was a bit of a problem. In fact, on the day Stories launched, CEO Kevin Systrom admitted to TechCrunch that he hadn't posted anything on Instagram in 6 days before the interview because none of the moments seemed special enough. Meanwhile, the success of Snapchat Stories had proven that people were extremely interested in sharing the raw footage of their lives so long as they knew it wouldn't stick around to haunt them forever. So Instagram copied Stories and became a platform that gave users complete freedom to create as the mood moved them. They could put up a beautifully filtered photo and leave it up like a fine work of art, or put up a piece of throwaway content that would be scrapped like the first draft of your last sales presentation. It scaled fast. Snapchat had already laid all the groundwork in getting people comfortable with the idea of ephemeral content, so there was no learning curve to contend with, as is the usual case when a platform introduces new features. Instagram placed it at the top of the app too, making it impossible for users to miss. In less than a year, Instagram Stories became one of the most popular features of one of the biggest platforms in the world, offering a dynamic place for users to create content to complement their perfectly curated Instagram feed. There are many features that make Instagram a requirement for any budding influencer or entrepreneur. You can post for posterity, or you can post for instant gratification. You can draw and filter and caption and tag. Though the feature is currently available only to verified accounts, you soon will be able to add links to your posts, a simple move that will open up floodgates of opportunity to drive people to your other content, whether it's on your own website, your blog, or other social networks. Anyone wishing to build a personal brand should be on Instagram. Create a profile now or regret it for years to come. 7 steps to biz dev. Number 1. make sure your Instagram is full of incredible content, the best you can make it. More people are about to come to see what you're about. Number two, search relevant keywords. For example, if you're building a biker brand, motorcycles. Three, click the first hashtag that shows up. As I record this, there are 2.4 million posts with the hashtag motorcycles. Four, click on every picture you see with that hashtag. The first four that show up, in this instance, belong to accounts that have combined followers of over 1 million Instagrammers. Five, investigate every account and any linked websites to confirm that they are owned by the people and companies in your field. Or, even if they're not, check if they could use your services or products anyway. Six, click on the three dots in the upper right corner of their pages and send those individuals or businesses a custom written direct message. Do not spam and cut and paste bullshit. If that's the best you can do, you've already lost. Seven, in your message, explain what drew you to them. I love your work. I've always admired you. You post funny memes. This post is super creative. Why you are worth paying attention to. My goal is to promote better bike safety. I've designed a helmet that most helmet-adverse riders won't mind wearing. I've launched the freshest, most exciting biker-themed YouTube channel on the internet. And what value you can offer. I'd like to send you one of my helmets to try. I'd love to invite you on air to talk about your new book, and I'd be honored if you'd let me make a free video documenting your next ride. I can send you six bikers to model leather jackets for your vlog for free. You can also target your search by location. Just type in the name of your city, sometimes even your neighborhood, and click the places or look for the locations symbol in your list of top results. You'll see everyone who's posted in your immediate area. Do this. Search, click, investigate, DM for 6 to 7 hours every day. Do it during lunch breaks, every bathroom break, every time you're waiting for your child to get out of dance class, and in the 20 minutes you've got before the enchiladas come out the oven. Only a tiny fraction of the people you reach out to will respond. That's all you need. With every successful contact, you increase your ability to prove yourself worthy of any attention at all, and you increase your visibility. Do this enough times, and the effect will snowball until suddenly you'll be the brand that people and businesses start reaching out to. To see these instructions in action, go to GaryVee.com/GVBizDev. That's GVBizDev. Guys, I'm going to go veer off for a minute before I go into the imagine this. Instagram direct messaging and a video I put out since I actually wrote this book called the $1.80 Instagram strategy. So if you Google my name and put in a $1.80 Instagram strategy, has been paying huge dividends for people. Business developing and engaging in direct messages on Instagram, reaching out to big people with huge followers and audiences is an incredible opportunity. Please, if anything that you've listened to in this book, make this something you focus on. Rewind if you have to and re-listen to it, or go to GaryVee.com/GVBizDev. Imagine this. Let's say your name is Rick, and you're a 27-year-old clothing manager in Nashville, Tennessee. You're ambitious, and you're lucky enough to work for an organization that isn't interested in micromanaging your social media accounts. You start taking pictures of everything in the store. Let's call it an avant. And everyone who walks in, if they will let you. You photograph the tops as they're being laid out on the shelves, the dresses as they're being hung, the shoes as they're being displayed. You photograph yourself in men's fashions, adding your personal flair to every outfit, and you photograph your female employees in the women's clothes. You ask your customers if they'll pose for pictures in their new outfits. Then you post every picture on your Instagram account, accompanied by a well-thought-out, relevant hashtag or two. You know that how you frame the images or the techniques you use to give them a sense of fun or creativity and really show off the clothes will be crucial to growing your fan base. But you can't build a fan base if you're not visible. Aside from getting influencers to mention you or your product, or paying for ads, you know that the fastest way for a brand starting at zero like yours is to master hashtags. If it's springtime and you're posting a picture of a woman in a canary yellow raincoat, you include the coat brand's hashtag, along with hashtag in avant-wear, hashtag fashion, hashtag spring fashion, hashtag spring looks, hashtag raincoat, hashtag ready for rain, and hashtag yellow. As more people spot your work, in time, you become known for your fashion sense and cheeky sense of humor. You start reaching out to people who live in the vicinity of the store, but you don't use direct mail, because you've got no money for that. And you don't hunt for the fashionistas and society people already appearing in the local culture and lifestyle glossies that document all the area fundraisers and real estate development. Instead, every day during your lunch break, you open up your Instagram account and type in Nashville, Tennessee. Up pop the most popular posts in the area. You click around on a few of the ones with the most followers to make sure they live in and around Nashville. And in particular, you look for pictures in these accounts that suggest that the account owners would be interested in wearing pieces from your store. You then send them a direct message. Hi, my name is Rick, and I'm the manager in Avant. Love your look. Come by the store. We'll give you a gift certificate for 20% off. In the time that takes you to finish your chicken salad, you've started building relationships with six new people who live near your store and have a proven interest in your product. You do this every day, 5 days a week. Of the 32 people you talk to every week, seven post a story about how this guy named Rick, who works at In Avant, reached out and complimented their shoes, top, or hat, and offered them a discount. Maybe you go even further. You put together a fashion show and DM all the influencers in the area, as well as any locals whose Instagram account makes it clear they're really into clothes and accessories, and you invite them to attend so that they can see the new collection and get 30% off all in-store purchases. And then you make sure the event is so fun and special that people start posting pics of themselves and telling their followers where they're spending their evening. Here's what happens next. People start posting pictures of themselves on their own Instagram accounts and tagging you, the brand, and the store. Competitors start reaching out to find out if you're interested in recreating some of your magic at their stores. Meanwhile, someone in In Avant upper management takes notice and realizes that she has an incredibly valuable employee in Tennessee, who she will pretty much do anything to keep. Or by following up all this incredible word of mouth with impeccable customer service, for those who venture into the store, in short order, In Avant becomes one of the hottest new stores in Nashville, and you catch the attention of fashion photographers and clothing designers all over the country. Or some of the brands you feature in your Instagram posts notice what you've done and reach out to see if you're interested in helping them with their social media. Another big win. Or you have so much fun sharing your brand of visual storytelling that you decide you want to go and do it full time and you launch your own digital fashion magazine. Not only can you build business for the store by biz devving this way, but you can also make someone's day. Any or all of these scenarios could happen, and they could happen to you, whether you're a clothing store manager or work in retail of any kind, even in a restaurant. It all comes down to passion and proper execution.
How I'm Crushing It. Brittany Xavier, Thrifts and Threads. Instagram at Thrifts and Threads. It was supposed to be just a hobby, a creative outlet to practice with her new camera. That's what Brittany Xavier had in mind when she launched her blog, Thrifts and Threads, in December 2013. Even as a political science major, she'd always loved fashion and had made it a habit to follow trends and designers. Her look was a blend of high and low fashion, mixing ready-to-wear with vintage finds and select designer pieces. Upon graduation, she was accepted by several law schools, but concerned that law school was incompatible with raising a toddler, her daughter, Jaden, was only 3 years old, she instead went to work for an insurance marketer that would guarantee family-friendly hours. It paid the bills, and it wasn't too demanding. She often found herself finished with her goals.